Hey, it's James here, welcoming you to this special podcast presentation in association with Cannabis Week 2020. Make sure you do not miss any of the CSE's great cannabis content by subscribing to this podcast and joining our CEO and expert interviews on Instagram Live at Canadian Securities Exchange. Also, if you like video, all of our interviews will be featured on the Cannabis Week playlist, featured prominently on CSE TV. That's CSE space TV on YouTube. And finally, this is a friendly reminder that the views, information, or opinions expressed during the podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of the Canadian Securities Exchange and its employees. So happy listening, and now enjoy the show.
This is Hashtag Finance, presented to you by the Canadian Securities Exchange, the exchange for entrepreneurs, with your host, James Black.
Without further ado then, Bruce Linton, thank you for joining me today on the Hashtag Finance podcast, proudly supported and brought to you by the Canadian Securities Exchange. I'm James Black, and I'm joined today by the man, the myth, the soon-to-be a legend, Bruce Linton. If you can recognize him, that is Bruce Linton. I'm assured that the name that showed up today was Bruce Linton, and it sounds like Bruce Linton. Are you Bruce Linton?
I appear to be so, yes.
So what are you doing? Obviously, you've embraced COVID life, unlike my boss, the CEO, Richard Carlton, who shaves every day. What are you doing? Where are you hunkered down? What's life like for you right now?
Well, so I live in Ottawa, and yeah. I've been at the house for 17 and a half years. And yep. In the prior 17 and a half years, I think I maybe spent an hour in here. It's a very nice kind of solarium room. There are windows behind. It's part of a bad place for Skype and Zoom, but looks back out to the backyard and the gardens. And I had never been in here, really. I played a video game in here sometimes, pinball, but I made this my office. And now I love my house because I watch like wild turkeys go running by and then a fox goes running by. And so I've been doing a lot of four financings. Including one for CSE listed company Vireo during COVID. So you want to keep busy, right? You want to find funding for a marijuana company in the US. You want to find funding for a software company that allows these sorts of things, particularly Microsoft Teams, to work better in Canada. Right. You want to do a SPAC so that, you have something where you can go buy some hemp assets and then peripherally be involved and active with the final support and outcome of psychedelics company MindMed getting.
And we're going to touch on all that stuff. So that's a great because to come to you and just talk about cannabis would be limiting. We're doing this sort of part of a. So I sent you the invitation. I said, look at all the people we talk to. You know, all these CEOs of the MSOs and stuff. Yeah. Yes.
Yo, everybody.
Yeah. So we couldn't have the full tapestry of opinions without you as part of that mix. However, it'd be ignorant for us not to talk about technology and neuropharmaceuticals. I'm going to try not to use the word psychedelics during this conversation. Mm-hmm. I've done some research. But let's talk about technology and COVID-19 and the pandemic era that we're living through. It hasn't been all doom and gloom. I mean, yourself, from your perspective as someone who runs a couple of companies like Martello and Rockify, I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on how those two experiences and vantage points are giving you maybe optimism for what's going to happen as a result of this. The way that we're now connecting through digital means and the way we're sharing. I know I'm just touching on the two business models you have, but maybe give me that long-term view that this whole thing is going to cause a ripple effect through the technology industry.
Yeah, well, things that you couldn't make happen despite making total sense for 20 years. So best example during COVID is telemedicine. For some reason, despite the fact that technology was there, you always had to go to a place full of sick people in order to see a doctor. That sounds like a stupid business model. And so this has actually made what was possible for 20 years become practical and active. And ask somebody who didn't have to leave their house in order to have an appointment, which did not involve any kind of invasive actions, but it was a doctor's appointment, or they had to take a picture. If you think you got a mole that doesn't look good, guess what they can do? Take a picture, send it to them. So things like that started to happen. And things like this, yeah. you know, um, the platform of communicating this way isn't just easy because it's COVID. It's easy because I'll use the example of collective growth. We raised $150 million in 2.5 days of marketing. We could have had $250 million. They offered it. We presented to people in 6 cities over 2.5 days that if I had to do it, I would have taken me more than a week of travel and running around. And the attention span of the people on the other side was way better than when you sit with them in an office.
Yeah, and I agree.
The reality is that may change when people begin going to office as the buy side guys. But if they use public transit in New York and Toronto, they're not going to an office in 2020. And so I think that has been very interesting. And then so that plays to Martello. We did an acquisition of a company out of Europe that supports Office 365, Microsoft 365, which has a thing called Teams. And Teams is great. This is great. Zoom's great. But that has shown users to get more. You use that tool when you think you need it. And when you can't just jump in a car or go to an office, you know you need it. And so what happens with Martello is its login and frequency of use goes way up on this, which means that I think when we have new products to sell to our existing user base, we have a lot more of their attention span. Yep. And so if you invent new things or buy new things, you're showing to people who are actively focusing on your product. Company like Rockify, one would say, well, God, this company should be dead. Because the whole concept is, how do we not buy things but share things? Well, let's see, during a pandemic where you don't want to touch any hard service, getting people to actually do that is terrible. So
I was going to ask you about that. How do you lend somebody something now or sell them something that you've touched?
Yeah. So what you do is you say, well, you quickly recognize what's wrong. That model won't work for this period of time. But when COVID has run its course to an extent, we're going to be in a recession or a depression, which means that people who have stuff will want to monetize it. And people who don't have stuff will have less money to buy it. So they're going to want to get it cheaper and share. So all the goal must be, how do we build brand and survive until that event occurs? Mm-hmm. And so you look around and say, well, so kids are going to school at home. Yeah. Well, what if the people aren't well off and the way they access the internet is through a phone? Well, that's not going to work too well if you got 3 kids and they want to do that. So why couldn't we Rockify a whole bunch of computers from people like Google who might not be using them, or phones and other devices from Rogers and Telus, which we have, and get them to people's homes, use the software platform to track that you have 2 of these and 1 of those at your house. You got them on this day and you need to return them in this way. Now, we didn't make any money, but we tested and used our stuff. Then you say, well, if you can't go to the gym, why can't a gym go to you? Huh? Well, now, if you try to go to a gym in, say, Austin, Texas or San Antonio, there's no gym gear there. That stuff is all Rockified out. Today, yeah. CBC is doing a story on what's called an aqua gym. You know, if you've had an injury and or want to use water-based training, not swimming, but say a bike that works in the pool, those guys can't open. So they're Rockifying all that stuff out because everybody's summer pool is opening. Hmm. And so all of a sudden, you just have to say, well, is there a way to invert things and use them? And so the companies that do that, I think a company like Martello and or Rockify, even to an extent, Vireo, Gage, a lot of the ones I'm involved with, Slang, they're better off because they had to stop pushing, slow down, think, aim, and then start pushing again.
Right. And do you feel that you now have that perspective after your experience with Canopy, which was a hyperbolic growth curve? And now everyone's kind of being forced to just step back a second and go, like, hey, you've been there, man. You've seen how fast things can move. And that sometimes, you know, it's debatable if that's an advantage or what. Like, are you applying that learning at all? Or is this just a different chess game now that we're playing and you've just taken the rules and have to apply different logic?
I would say, like, I took about 15 minutes time off after Canopy.
Yeah.
And the reason I didn't pause is the sector was still vibrant. And if I said, you know, I'm going to take a year and put my feet up, but call me in a year, you know who would have called me? Nobody. You would have been a footnote. I would have been a footnote to the initiation of a sector. But if what you do is you continue your momentum, and I've used it before, but business life and often very much overall life is about swinging through a jungle, knowing when to let go of the last vine and grab the next vine. Mm. And if you decide, well, I'm just going to hang here for a while. You're going to have to climb down. There's no more. And so I didn't use any opportunity for pause in Canopy Exit. I used it to mutate into other things that I could take that energy, reputation, and positioning for. What COVID did is much more similar to 9/11. Mm. And 9/11 put a pause for 3 or 4 months And it made everybody have to think about, can I, will this business work now? Will we ever recapitalize? But it was sharply started, and it felt like it could open when people wanted. This one has a lot more question marks. COVID, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark. We don't have data to know who has it. We don't have data. Like, if a country says they have very few cases, it's because they probably did very little testing. A really good way to have a low percentage of people who have it is don't test them.
Right. Yeah. And there's not a lot of tests to go around in some cases. People don't even know how to deploy.
I think this one is a much different, different pause. And so I felt like when I was dealing with each of the companies, guys, let's assume 2020 is over. What do we have to do to be ready for 2021? That is a different frame than how do we handle the next month?
And it's funny because I've taken that approach too with our business, where you kind of go, yes, I'm unlikely to have a physical event for the rest of the year. I'm not going to fly anywhere. The last place I flew was Switzerland. And even going to that this year, Bruce, was like, whoa, like we're really forcing the issue here. And then to think of anything remotely close to doing that, being around that many people for the rest of the year. I was downtown last week for a minute, and I want to know part of it. I'm happy to be here doing this. I can do this. But to put a date on it and say, well, the end of the year and then everything's going to shift is almost like too arbitrary to say that we're just going to find a date in the calendar and then just shift like the year. Like, you know, this year I'm going to find love because it's now 2021. It's not, it's just not how the world works. So I think what we need to look at is this logical phased rollout and then know how to deal with setbacks. There's going to be setbacks, as there always is in any sort of thing like this. And I don't know where I'm going with that, other to say that as we're all in the world of business, we just need to understand that there's not going to be a clear break. And it's very interesting you juxtapose that with 9/11.
Think about, you said phased rollout.
Yeah.
It's weird because if in January, mm-hmm. you uttered the phrase, you know, we're going to think this through and work through a phased rollout, I would look at you and say, I have no idea what you speak of. But phased rollout has become a thing. And so we think it's logical and true. I don't disagree, but I don't agree with the phased rollout. What I think is some countries maybe will have 25% unemployment. Yeah. When does that become 15%? When does it become 10%? Some countries may suspend the ability of airlines to bring people from other countries. Maybe they'll say, like, South America is a hotspot. Russia's a hotspot. India's a hotspot. So what does restricted travel do to those countries and the interaction play the places? So, like, I'm more like, whatever the rollout is great. It sounds like a nice headline. I'm more curious about unemployment rate, GDP, global traffic patterns. Every time there's a, when they have this much massive debt coming, mm-hmm. as government, how excited are they about anything? I just had a chat with a guy, like, why is, what's it called, DraftKings worth so goddamn much? Well, you know why? Because I think as soon as there's sports, everybody's going to be watching because we haven't watched any sports. And every government's going to say, we need the money. We love gambling. Please make it happen here.
People will gamble on people throwing dice and nothing else. I mean, they will do something to keep their mind occupied and their pockets, you know, you know what I mean? People need that dopamine rush. And
governments need the taxes.
They that too. So let's talk about cannabis then. So let's talk about what we've seen the last couple of weeks. Well, the last week specifically, quarter one rollout of earnings from the big MSOs. Some encouraging numbers, double-digit growth on the top end. Like you mentioned at the beginning of this interview, guys like Joe Lizardi, leading companies like Curaleaf, yourself with Vireo. Now, that's an industry that was protected in a lot of the states it was operating in and seems to be a you know, hitting a stride again after one bad month in May. Now people are consuming. Is the government or the banking laws, do you see anything that's going to relax further when they start to realize that this is a cash crop, this is something that we can now use to generate some semblance of new growth addition to GDP? Is there any light at the end of the tunnel here for the US cannabis industry to really hit its stride with relaxed regulation as part of COVID? And there's a double-edged sword to it. But
federally, I feel like the probability of any discussion has gone to zero.
Yep.
The entire, like, it's just, that is not going to happen. But I do believe state by state, they have a unique individual state by state circumstance and massive, like, hello, you can now run New York State. Can you say trillions, billions, whatever, zillions of dollars of deficit? So I think a lot of states are actually going to get far more considerate of the potential revenue, job creation, and utilization of existing infrastructure, storefronts, and industrial platforms to grow.
Yeah.
So I think state by state, it will happen. The most supportive data I would have on that is any state that actually said medical cannabis stores and cannabis stores are essential services. That is a break point on the positioning. So really only places like Massachusetts dicked around on that.
Yeah, yeah, we know that.
A lot of states really did play that this is part of our core offering, our citizens expect and want it. So I'm optimistic that those indicators tell me that there's an economic need, a valid view on what this is about, and that with efficient lobbying, you can either expect to see more products offered. So like, hello, Minnesota and New York, how about allowing people to buy legally smokable marijuana? Places like, you know, maybe New York, a few others that might add rec so they can see the upside. Because when I look at Michigan Engage, oh my God, like every month is just way better than the prior month. And the store openings have lineups all the time. So it is clear that in a state that's well regulated for medical and rec, a company like Gage has one single problem: working capital to keep up with expansion.
Yeah.
Isn't that a terrible problem? Oh, I need more money so I can put up more stores and have more inventory because I sell everything I have.
Yeah. I mean, as long as, you know, at some point the money, you know, comes back, like, you know, I read that book Shoe Dog, and I remember reading about Phil Knight and having the demand and having to raise this money to try to, you know, supply the market, even though he was, you know, short-term losing money, and how difficult it can be sometimes to meet demand. And sometimes money doesn't necessarily fix the immediate issue. It's you can get jammed, but in that respect, yes, it's a good growth indicator. And I think in the US, we've talked to a lot of these CEOs, we've polled them. We said, you know, do you think federal legalization or banking reform, what's the most important of the two? And almost unanimously, we've seen, can you fill in the blank?
Yeah, banking reform. Banking reform at least allows the cost of capital to probably go to half of its current cost.
Yes.
Maybe a third.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that's what Jason Ackerman said. He's a reformed investment banker, and him, you know, was very aggressive on that, very similar projection to what you just said, Bruce. Okay, so we got cannabis in the U.S. We've talked. Anything you want to say there on Vireo or what you guys are positioned to do there?
Well, you know, I think in a sense,
or slang for that matter.
Yeah. Well, COVID. COVID for each of those did two things. Mm-hmm. In the case of Vireo, we had a new CFO. He'd been on for about 2 or 3 months. And what we needed to shift there was a focus to being excellent in medical and excellent in terms of making sure we were having growth that was at a much faster rate than costs were growing. CFOs that are really on that help. So Sean came in. That company is, we raised 10 million plus Canadian, tucked it in. And the company now is focused on how do I use that money to show that I have a great business and have actually, you know, the right indicators that this is sustainable. And then the upside for them of any one state doing what we just talked about is massive. In the case of Slang, it showed that when you're a brands company, your ability to expand rapidly in terms of having 1,600 plus stores, rapid revenue growth is great, but their ability to contract is even better. Mm. So they were able to cut their operating costs because, you know what, they got some markets that are just ripping, and then they got markets where people used to go skiing in March as their primary reason you might go to Vail. Tell me how you think that market's doing. So they've been able to figure out and shape it. And then they've been able to hustle because Peter and Billy work. And so there's a press release out this morning talking about the fact that Gage in Michigan and Slang have struck a deal to bring all of Slang's products and put them all through Gage.
Yeah.
And the effect of that is, I think, you know, a lot of smart, good work turned into traffic that's going to buy their products. And so maybe that deal wouldn't have gotten done if everybody was just business as usual.
I hear you. No, shout out to those guys. And so let's take a look at perspective on Canada. Obviously, so funny story. My dad sends me a photo the other day, and it's a table full of edibles. My dad's in his 60s. And well, good for you, Dad. You're cool. And but good for you for supporting, because one of them was actually one of our clients' products. So I you know, he's supporting our business too in a way. But point being is that since Cannabis 2.0 rollout and since everything else that's happened in your experience, you know, there's been a lot of shots fired at the Canadian industry for what it was and now what it is. And, you know, I still think there's a global role for Canadian leadership in the global cannabis space. But I'm trying to figure out from your perspective, seeing that you've now stepped away from that one role that we just discussed, what do you see Canada contributing? Like, what do you see us as a nation after all the stuff we did to catalyze this industry? Where do we still stand as leaders in the cannabis space, seeing as we've been through a lot?
So I was on a really good call last Friday afternoon where Harvard and MIT professors were presenting the research they're doing, which had been philanthropically supported by Bob Broderick. Bob gave, I think, $7 million, might have been $9 million. And Bob's out in New York. His first investment in cannabis was in Canopy. And so he gave them the money, and I listened to that hour really carefully. And some of the challenges they would have would be, for example, one of the persons was doing work, and the patients who were volunteers kept saying, this weed is terrible. Like, this is not at all like what I buy. And she said, well, the only place I can get it is through this thing out of, Mississippi, and it's this kind of strain. And so their research was flawed because the inputs were so weird and restricted. And another had a particular way they wanted to do isolates and things, and they couldn't get permits and they couldn't get product. So where Canada's opportunity is, that's all federally legal, which means Canada should have and can have and did have and may have still the best research going on, science research, that says this is the informed view of what can happen in what combinations. This is the method of mechanism of action for these combinations, et cetera, et cetera. And so if they do that, if you do the best core science, it should lead to the best intellectual property, which should lead to the longest, most durable way to have both recreation and medical products. Yeah. And I was always of that view, but when I listened to Harvard and MIT, and it's through the, you can hear it through the Alumni Association, I think at both of the sites it's up for review. Listen with the view of, none of those things would be a problem in Canada. It would not be restrictions on research. You would actually be able to achieve your goal and not even bat an eye. So that platform should be and continues to be somewhat utilized to give that opportunity.
Right. So Canada could still play a major role through their capabilities in R&D and to develop the data that'll support the medical efficacy of, you know, the plant.
The overall efficacy.
Yeah.
So right now, like maybe your dad's edible table has this much THC and CBD, but maybe in 3 years, there are four other cannabinoids he would actually prefer in some level of concentration that once we know the efficacy, we might want to actually spend some time, how do we make them not rare anymore? And that's either the plant is a bioreactor or using, you know, mechanisms in labs, whether it's yeast or other things. And so I just think that science window hasn't closed. It isn't actioning everywhere else around the world. And I would hope that it's still part of the play here, because that is how you create durable, like, we had a company called Nortel. Nortel's dead. Nortel should not have been dead. Like, they gave money to car companies so they wouldn't be dead, but the car companies aren't even owned by Canada. But they gave money to the best intellectual property pool we had in Canada for the future. And so when you think about it, Nortel was relevant and dominant and seriously active around the globe because it had long, deep intellectual property.
And we should Now, you worked with Terry Matthews, right?
I still do. In fact, I got a call after this. Yeah. And I can tell you, he's one of those guys that it's a bit like Richard, that if you Skype with Terry or you go pop by and do social distancing, I'll bet you like a lot of money that today he is wearing a white, crisply pressed dress shirt, a tie, and his blazer is on. And so, you know, old business. But, you know, these guys, they put money into long bets.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's talk about one of those long bets, which is, again, I got to use the term properly, neopharmaceuticals. So obviously we know your association with MindMed, and obviously we've seen a few people knock on our door at the exchange around this topic. We were obviously, talking about going to a plane, I believe you were supposed to go to Israel to go speak at the SciCan conference with Saul and those guys.
Yeah.
And
I think
so,
doing it virtually in a week or so.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. You know, and, you know, again, props to those guys for pushing it forward. They made that part of their topic set in Switzerland this year. And it was fascinating to hear where that industry was at. And, you know, when I started my career, I didn't expect to help facilitate capital formation in cannabis. Now we're talking about psychedelics. And, you know, until my dad sends me the picture of the table with mushrooms, I don't know. But the point being is you got into the space pretty hard. You're pretty vocal about it. And I just want to hear from you, and you can run with this one a little bit. I want to hear your thesis on the space. Why are you so excited about it? And you know, how does it compare to cannabis as far as addressable market and stuff like that? I've heard outrageous numbers. I want to hear from you directly. What do you see this being all about?
Two things drove me to be interested in it. The broad range of things people would call psychedelics, we can call neuromedicines or whatever, but psychedelics is the historic term. And they're called that because they definitely have a range of impacts on people's perception of reality, their mental state. And so the question is, can they be managed efficiently to cause positive outcomes on a regular basis better than most of the other stuff? And when I say the other stuff, like, you know, if you had a kid and you gave a Ritalin, it's like giving the best available medicine that's 35 years old. So like, I thought there is a big window of improvement, and I know a number of people who personally benefited. And I also know that, if you end up having a neurological event, as one doctor has said, if it was your heart, we can actually get you a new one, but amputation is not an option with your brain. And so they have to come to a solution. Second thing was that the policy that made them psychedelics and prohibited, like it's just multi-generational stupid. It's essentially like, you know, well, why do you hate that person? Well, because my granddad hated that person. That kind of logic, eventually somebody wakes up and actually says, I just talked to that person. They're actually super good. And so I think that the regulatory window is going to change, and it's going to change in part because cannabis opened up the topic and in part because the science of the other products has proven to be ineffective. You know, people can talk about addiction. They can talk about, you know, off-ramps for that, but they should be talking about like PTSD, everything to, you know, how do we deal with really outlying edge mental state ailments? And if they're a social problem that's not being remedied, I think all things are on the table now. And so I'm optimistic on those two bases. And mostly when I started doing I started looking at these things in 4.5, 5 years ago. Like I met with George before it was called Compass. We did a deal at Canopy with Beckley Foundation to bring all their psychedelics in. After I was out of Canopy, they bought the cannabinoid part of Beckley and told Beckley, you should keep all your psychedelic stuff. And so I like the space just because I thought, well, it's just another mismanaged, stupid public policy that actually has active ingredients that could do some good. Why don't we just do that?
Right. And so with your current endeavor with MindMed, you know, you guys announced phase two ADHD trials, LSD, and for lack of a better term, Ibogaine is the other. I know there's a more technical term for it, but it's a long-term play. So anytime you get into pharmacological, anything you get into testing, phase trials, all this stuff, you're looking at protracted, expensive testing. And try to make me understand or explain to those who are listening how that makes sense in the world of public finance and how we should be approaching the almost this, you know, it's going to be a slow burn, right? Or am I wrong?
No, I think if you're going to write one check in the psychedelic space, you should plan to write four.
Right.
And so you should say, how much money will I allocate to this company over the next two or three times they come to see me? Because they probably will again. And that's a general term. Part of the other part is you need to do your due diligence, because I know a lot of folks who maybe made or didn't make money in cannabis who are starting psychedelics companies, and it's because they want to make money, not do the work. So are there scientists, are there regulations? And some of the times you can actually pick short-term and medium-term. So one of the other ones I'm involved with is called Red Light Holland. And they're currently private, but they use essentially a jurisdictional policy structure that allows them to produce the bottom port of mushrooms, the truffle, legally and sell it. They have a short-term revenue opportunity. And if they execute it properly, they may have a medical and rec team sell, and they may build brands under each, and that may be highly valuable. So you could actually buy some of that one and then some of the MindMed, and you start thinking about short, medium term. And even MindMed is designed, a lot of people like biotech because there's a smart scientist who comes up with some molecule and it does this thing maybe. And if you're patient for 4 or 5 years, you'll know for sure. I don't like that model. So what MindMed, what we're doing, and we talked it through, is we're a platform. A platform means that you have common resources you share. So whether it's clinical design, execution, finance, contract licensing, in, out, all that stuff. But then we take a list, and what we do is down one side, we list all of the ailments that we think could be affected by these neuromedicines. And across the top, we list all of the ones which we think could have an effect. So pick something simple like cluster migraines. Which ones is going to be our biggest bet if we were doing cluster migraines? Which active ingredient, which jurisdiction, how we do that? And then the second one, you might do a small hedge bet to find somebody doing a different active ingredient on a different mechanism of action to get that. And so what a platform does is to say, what is the size of the market for cluster migraines, as an example? What are the current best practice medicines and how good or bad are they? So if you have a big enough market, you have a likely hit indication, that is someplace you should bet enough of your total pool of capital to do the research the best channel you can so that you can win that. And psychedelics are similar to marijuana in only maybe one or two ways. One way they're common, have in common, is the number of people who told me they use cannabis for migraines, for sleep, CBD in this high dosage for the kid with spasticity, which type and what way they want and what ratio. And then you go off and try and do science to figure out if the thousands of people who said that it works in this way are right. And so with psychedelics, there's a large community of people who've been doing underground trials in self-medication that say these things work in this way. So you know what I mean? You're kind of reverse engineering, and we'll stick with cluster migraines. If a whole bunch of people use a certain type of thing to solve their cluster migraines, probably they're not all wrong. Now, how, what, how much, how often, what format, that's where the work should get done.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, any drug development is it's trying to find the hit, right? The hit. Yeah. Lifts.
But that's where biotech says, I have invented something. I wonder what it does. And I hope it doesn't kill the mouse. These are very different pathways to get. We already know the answer in so many jurisdictional thought processes of what it does. Now, the question is that really microdosing? How do you know you're microdosing? How do we actually make it so that we have a reliable microdose? What if one of the things I thought was fascinating for MindMed is, what if this is going really badly and I hate the ride? Well, we have something for that to stop it.
Yeah, that's important, folks. I might have had an experience at one point in my life where that would have been really useful. No, I'm really curious about microdosing. I mean, can I ask, like, if you've been down that road at all? Have you sampled the microdose?
No, so like it's really weird. I'd be an ideal patient for a ton of things, but I don't. I just run around and do my own stuff. Like when we're done this, I'm just going to go outside and maybe use my chainsaw. That's kind of like my therapy.
That's your therapy, yeah.
But I would say that when I started Tweed Canopy, it was not because I actually said, "Well, I really like cannabis and I use it for this thing." It was more like, I really understand what the government wants and how to not lose cannabis matters a lot to them. And I understand as a techie, how we can do that. Yeah. And I tell my customers, let's do that. In this one, people tell me stuff all the time about I had a really good call with a guy on Tuesday, who had made a lot of money in a variety of ways. And he wanted to talk to me quite badly. And we took 25 minutes to get to the point where he told me why, which was that he had been a person in a really bad spot when he was younger, and through a really heavy dose of psilocybin, it changed his life to the better by a mile. And he was in a bad spot, and he described it and why he's supportive and how can he be helpful. You have people stopping you to tell you stuff multiple times a week. A person last time I was in Toronto stopped me as they were walking towards me, said, "You're Mr. Lynn?" I said, "Well, I'm Bruce." "Yeah." And the guy said, "Let me tell you how I use microdosing at LSD to deal with a specific thing. And this is how common." I didn't even know this guy. It is one of those things where it just feels like what you need is probably some people who want to track capital, follow rules, and find great scientists who actually want to do the work.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear that. I've met some people from Silicon Valley that have gone fully on the train, and I'm always fascinated by it. It seems like there's, there's some really interesting applications for it if it can be contained and given out in a rational dose. The brain seems to be an untapped resource sometimes. Let's just reflect on leadership for a minute, sort of as one of our last things here, because I really want to just dig into it a little bit. I've seen you commenting on LinkedIn quite a bit, and obviously there's been some tough times at Canopy as far as, you know, what's reported as far as job cuts, and you've been really cool to comment and encourage people that have been going through that situation, A, to reflect on the work that they've done, but also to say, you know, hey, you know, don't forget that what we built here was really special. And I know going through some of the interviews and prep for this, you know, how important it was for you to manage Canopy from a leadership position of caring about the people. And so props for that. I just want to give you props for that. But just maybe tell me how you said you didn't take a lot of time off, but I'm sure out there chainsawing, you have reflected on leadership one way or another. And maybe some of the things that you would like to share to the next generation or even your peers about leadership that, we can all take with us as we navigate this really difficult situation.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So probably 4 years ago, I made the first one of these, and this is not a prop, it was just, and the reason I made it, it had two of them, one said Greenleaf and the other said Douglas, and there were employee 5 and 3. Hmm. And I made those so that we could attach them to a wall in the main lobby up high in the main office, and everybody seen when they came in. And I had a ceremony where I said, these two folks are having their name recognized, their employee number, and they're going up there because when they arrived, they were very flexible in how they were. They would do what needed done. When new people arrived, they found ways to include them even though they were busy. And when it was time for them to leave, they gave me at least 4 weeks notice so that they could exit without causing a funny breakup. If you want to have your name and your number ever go up on the wall, don't screw any one of those three things up. And then we spent several weeks capturing what is our culture, because we had one, and it was about sharing. It was about inclusion. It was about, just the idea that everybody's in this together because we all have equity and you should just be nice to everyone. You should actually just take the time to be pleasant and catch people doing things right. And so we codified the culture through, I think, about 141, 145 people from all different places. What were they worried about losing if we got bigger? And then what did that mean we had now? And so, I spent a lot of time on it. And I try to remind people frequently that they shouldn't have any stress being super busy. Stress is only when you have nothing to do, the phone's not ringing, there's no cash, because that means somebody's out of work. Yeah. And so enjoy the madness. Enjoy like the fact that you're at the front of the parade in something that's been 100 years sort of warming up and waiting to go. And so as people have to exit, and listen, I think if Mark and I were there, we would have had a number of cuts because the world didn't work out the way we expected. It's, a bit different. So you have to do it. And so when I see people who are let go, I try to cherish what happened. Don't get bitter. And there were, some people are like, yeah, but they should have given me an extra week on severance. So, well, maybe eat like a little lighter for a few weeks, but don't get mad about that. Like, you can't fight a big company over a week.
No.
Now, would I be inclined to give extra? Yeah, but that's why I'm probably, not the right person to run at this stage. Like, it is actually, I think I've had to fire people in about 8 companies, and I always try to give a big severance package because you never know when you're going to bump into them again. And really, if it's 5 weeks versus 4 weeks, I never felt good about that. But what the folks did was quite amazing, right? Like they launched, and I just see stuff like WeWork now has a CBD line. Well, that was a British company we bought that didn't have a CBD line, but had terrific, I think, 30 or 34 countries that were selling their products in. And so I remind them they should be very proud of what they've created. And I try to be as supportive. And, I've had a number of people stop by and have a coffee in my laneway with appropriate social distancing because they have time now. And shit, we probably didn't have a coffee if we worked together for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years. We didn't have time to sit down and drink a whole coffee.
No. The whole protocol about how we interact has changed. It's insane.
Yeah, but and now I can sit down and have a coffee with them because I have time. They have time. Once you get fired, you will find you have much more time.
Well, I hope I don't find myself in that position anytime soon. Look, Bruce, I don't want to take too much more of your time. I really want to tell you how much I appreciate you taking a moment out of your busy schedule. I know you're busy to spend some time with us on the podcast on Hashtag Finance. We also appreciate the fact that you're working with some of our clients here at the CSE, and you've always been a good guy to bounce ideas off of and hear from as we've grown together in this cannabis industry since going back now, 2014?
It's, I said, like, yeah, I'm going to go do that one because of you. And then I looked at it and said, geez, he's been good at fishing. He got, you got all the players in. Ken, Joe, Steve. That's good.
Yeah, and I'll give credit to the team. I mean, we've got you talk about team and why I want to ask about leadership is because I'm really proud of the people I work with. And hopefully at some point I don't have to go on LinkedIn and tell them, how much I am. I don't want to tell them right now on this podcast how proud I am of those people because they do an amazing job working with our clients. And I hope the clients feel that love too. So, we're on a happy note right now. I'm going to end on a happy note. Once again, Bruce, that's Bruce Linton, folks. Thanks for watching. Thanks for checking out the podcast. This will be up on YouTube for everyone to watch as well. So if you're listening to this, watch the video. You can see Bruce's beard. It looks phenomenal. Bruce, thanks again, man. Really appreciate you taking the time and give our best to everyone in your circle and stay safe. Stay safe and keep social distancing, I guess.
I will. This helps. See you, man.
Thanks, bud. All right. Bye. Hey, it's James here from the CSE, reminding you that if you just enjoyed this episode of Hashtag Finance, there's a lot more. Make sure you subscribe to this show, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Shows come out at least twice a week, so please do not miss out. Also, if you're on Instagram, please don't forget to follow us at Canadian Securities Exchange, all one word. We're hosting live daily content with great guests discussing the capital markets, entrepreneurship, and much more. And finally, if you like video, please subscribe to CSE/TV. That's CSE/TV on YouTube. You can find more great stuff, including exclusive series content like Cannabis Week 2020. As always, thank you for listening.